We're continuing in the Ramban in Shosh Hasheni. We're up to page of Zayin Amud Beis in the regular edition, page Pei Vav, the right hand column in the Frankel edition. And the Rambanit said that although the Rambam seems to say a blanket statement, anything the Prophet said is going to be rabbinic, he said, I agree with you on things that are just recorded in passing, and I even agree with you that institutions of Moshe Rabbeinu are going to be rabbinic. Aval, but, ma shekatub b'nevoah b'derech hatzavaot. When you have a situation where the prophets are commanding, they're not just recording that Am Yisrael accepted upon themselves to take off Maestro some fruits. They're not just recording that Am Yisrael accepted Muktzeh. They're recording a commandment. Kigon shemazirin al asei. For example, if the prophet's warning about an asei, umatrin al lota asei dvar Torah, or they warn you about a prohibition, that's biblical. And let's hear him out. Va'inyan hazeh, and the way this works, mipnei shehuzhanu b'torah, eile ha-mitzvot. The Torah tells us, these are the mitzvos that Moshe taught the Jewish people. And the Talmud says, the Gemara in Megillah says, melamed shein navi rashai lechadesh davar me'ata. Gemara in Shabbos, Gemara in Megillah. That when Moshe sealed things up and said, these are the mitzvos, he was telling you, and no more. No prophet is allowed to tell you any more. Yadanu ki haba b'nevuah dvar Torah, o shu pirush lepasuk shel Torah, o shu biyadam halachah l'shem Sinai, kmo shamru b'gmar Ta'anit. So if a prophet tells you to do something long term, then he's telling you something biblical, or he's explaining something in the Torah, or it's halachah l'Moshe Sinai. If the prophet records a commandment, well, it cannot be something new, because the Torah says no more new mitzvos from any prophets. As the Talmud tells us in Tanis, kmo shamru b'gmar Ta'anit, ha adat Yechezkel man amra, the following concept, until Yechezkel came and spelled it out for us. How did we know it? So the Talmud says it about all kinds of things that Yechezkel explains. The Navi Yechezkel explains laws of mourning. That doesn't say anywhere else. And other laws. So the Talmud says, and until Yechezkel came along, how'd you know it? Ela gmara gamrinu, they had a tradition that this is what the Torah wanted them to do. And Yechezkel came along and gave it a verse that is a support to this concept. So let's hear out the Ramban before we comment on it. Ulefichach chiyevu mita al pru'ei rosh umanu oto. The Mishnah in Sanhedrin records which people get the death penalty, and one of those that get the death penalty is a Kohen who does service when his hair is long. And how do you know that a Kohen who does service with his hair long gets a death penalty? The Torah says they shouldn't do it, but how do you know they get the death penalty? The verse says in Yechezkel, Uper alo yishalechu, says the Kohanim shouldn't grow their hair long. The yain lo yishtu kol kohen, nor should any kohen drink wine. And the Talmud says, so from that verse in Yechezkel, that juxtaposes in the same verse the prohibition of drinking wine and growing their hair long, the akushe puei rosh yishtu ye yain, that pasuk tells you that there is a common denominator, there is a common halacha between the a Kohen doing service with his hair grown long and a Kohen doing service after he has drank wine.
Because Torah gives us the punishment for drinking wine.
Mashtu yayin b'mita, the Torah says, by Aaron's children, it says, don't do service, and one who does is says, don't do service and you won't die. So it's sort of inferring that those who do service when they've drunk wine will get the death penalty. So we say, the pasuk in Yechezkel that lists these two mitzvos together, the pasuk says they shouldn't do service with their hair grown long. They shouldn't drink wine when they do the service. That's teaching me mashtuye ayin b'mita, just as the kohen who does service when he has drank wine gets the death penalty. Afpuei rosh b'mita, by the same token, a kohen who did the service when his hair was long also gets a death penalty.
It seems that way the Torah is not complete. Yechezkel was not after we conquered land. There is no time until he came. So, what, maybe that during his time someone was doing the service with the hair long, and therefore there was a need for the prophet to say something.
Okay, maybe. Let's see. Hinei hem lomdim isur ha-tera midivrei ha-kabbalah. You see that the Talmud in Sanhedrin derives the prohibition of doing service with grown hair from divrei kabbalah, from the words of the prophets, from the words of Yechezkel. And they learn a hekesh and they treat it as biblical. You're given the, you're saying it's chayiv misa. He said the words divrei Torah can mean halacha Moshe Sinai, can mean drabbanan, can mean doraisa. Right? That's true in Gemara lashon. Yeah. He's talking biblical. Okay. So, how does he call the words of the prophets? Divrei Kabbalah. That's a Talmudic term. In the Talmud, we often speak about the prophets as Divrei Kabbalah. Rashi had a student, Rabbi Inu Simcha, from the city of Vitri. And this student wrote a compilation on the Siddur and our Minhagim and the different piyutim we say, called the Machzor Vitri. And over there, much of what he says is traditions he has from Rashi. In the Machzor Vitri, he also quotes that between Pesach and Shavuos, we have a custom, and in the summer months, to learn Pirkei Avos. And in his introduction, in the very beginning, so he discusses Moshe Kibbel Torah Misinai, the first mission in Pirkei Avos. He has a commentary on all of Pirkei Avos. It's a fascinating sefer, the Machzor Vitri. I haven't yet learned all of it, but the parts I've learned are very, very interesting. He quotes Midrashim that I don't know of any other source for. And he quotes over there that the words of the prophets were called Divrei Kabbalah because we had them on tradition and the prophets never told us anything new. Meaning no prophet, no Jewish prophet, ever came on the scene and taught a new concept. God wants you to stand on your head every morning. No. The prophets would only put into writing or put into their prophecies concepts which were hitherto on tradition. And that is why, says the Machzor Vitri, that is why the words of the prophets are called Divrei Kabbalah. What do you mean Divrei Kabbalah? It's Nevi'im, it's written, it's Divrei Torah, it's Mikra. No, because we're stressing that the Navi simply put into writing something that we had on tradition from Moshe Rabbeinu. He didn't tell us anything new. So the same thing here. The Gemara says, Gemara gamrinu, we have this on tradition, v'ata Yechezkel v'as mechakra. Yechezkel came along and gave it a verse to support the concept. So the Ramban says, well, the Gemara says, he's chayav misa if he does service with his hair grown long, and you derive it from Yechezkel. Okay. Did we derive it from Yechezkel, or does that mean that prior to Yechezkel we had it on tradition, and then from Yechezkel we can see it in the verse?
The question is, I can understand there is a topic that Hashem brings, and He doesn't give a punishment.
There are many things that don't have a punishment. It says you should say Kriyat Shema every morning and every night. It doesn't say there's a punishment if you don't.
But don't we have a rule for what happens with a mitzvah at Asin? We're inferring a lav.
You have a lot of lavim that don't have punishments. Says you shouldn't say false testimony. Doesn't say what punishment you're going to get if you say false testimony. There are a lot of lavim that doesn't spell out their punishment.
The thing about the
Nevi'im
is you wouldn't know necessarily what they're writing down is Doraisa or Rabbanan.
So he's saying anything they say as a commandment is Doraisa.
Is it a commandment?
He began with that formula and then he shifted. He says, well, the logic behind it is that they can't invent any new mitzvot. So if they're telling you to do something, then obviously it has to be something that's biblical, because they can't. What do you mean?
Says it there. It's just the Rabbanan, but he wrote it
Ask better.
Ask better?
Yeah. Ask the question stronger.
Stronger?
Yeah. Think we have an example of that. We have something that the Nevi'im told us to do. Rabbinic mitzvah that's recorded in the Nevi'im or in the Ksuvim. Megillah. It says they institute to read Megillah. Okay, so that's Ksuvim, but okay. So let's hold that question. And after we've heard the Ramban, then let's come back to that. No, it's a very good question, but the Ramban is explaining different angles now, so let's hear him out. V'amru be'arel shehu be'azara. The Talmud says that a kohen that's uncircumcised is also warned not to do the service. V'shalu minalan. So the Talmud says, where does it say that? Amar Rav Chista devazem torat Moshe Rabbeinu lo lamadnu ad shebai chizkel v'limdanu. This, you can't learn it from Moshe Rabbeinu's Torah, but Yechezkel came and taught it to us. Kol ben echar arel lev arel basar lo evon mikdashi l'sharteni. If you have a person who's of uncircumcised heart or uncircumcised flesh, he may not come and serve me. Upaslo avodah shelo. And so they take the Kohen service and they say, that's disqualified. It doesn't say it in the Torah. It says it in Yechezkel. So you see, when the Navi says something, it can have biblical weight. Now, the Navi can't invent anything. The Navi can inform us of something that was on tradition. But to say that anything the Navi says is rabbinic, that's not true. He's saying, if the Navi tells you something, do or don't do, well, he's not going to invent anything. And if the Navi, like here, he says, an uncircumcised Kohen should not come in and serve me. So he's saying a commandment. He can't invent a new commandment. Okay, so he's informing you of something that we had on tradition until that point. And it has biblical weight.
So the Rambam said that everything
the Rambam said anything that the Nevi'im say is Drabbanan. What would the Rambam do with these examples? The Rambam would say, these Pesukim are a smachta. They never derived it from this Pasuk. You can't learn Divrei Torah from Divrei Kabbalah lo yalfinon. You're not going to learn biblical halachas from the words of the prophets. The Rambam would say, fine, so Chazal said, Ato Yecheskel Asmiche Yakro. Yecheskel came along and gave it a support from the Pasuk, but the concept didn't begin with Yecheskel. The halacha was the same from the days of Moshe Rabbeinu. It was Torah Shebaal Peh, and it was biblical Torah Shebaal Peh. So the Rambam agrees there's Torah Shebaal Peh that's biblical. The Rambam would just say, this doesn't bother me. The Rambam would say, fine, I agree it's biblical, but not from Yecheskel. It's biblical because they had it on tradition from Moshe Rabbeinu.
You're saying that whatever you find, you classify as the Rabbanan, just that that whatever is in there is not a derived, is not where you derive something that's derived.
That's my interpretation to the Rambam, but I think the Rambam would agree. You know, I'm trying to explain how I think the Rambam would say it. I don't think these are knockout punches to the Rambam. Our sages give us a condition, a stipulation when it comes to Gzera Shavah. You will not learn. You don't have this?
I do, but I remember that Gzera Shavah from YouTube.
Right. Hear him out. and then you'll bring the Gemara, so we'll worry about that then. So the Gemara tells us a condition that you cannot derive biblical halachos from the words of the prophet. K'moshu uskal b'gmar nidaz, the Talmud tells us in tractate Nida, v'chen lamdu m'divrei Yechezkel sheyu b'gdei kuna shel butz, t'chtiv parei pishtim yu al rosham, and the Talmud derives from Yechezkel that so that was parenthetical. He says there is this condition that you won't learn Gzera Shavah from the words of the prophet, but nonetheless you do have biblical derivations from the words of the prophet, that Kohanim have to wear garments of linen, as the verse says, Parei Pishtim Yiyu Al Rosham, they wear hats of linen. V'amru Nami, and the Talmud also tells us in Yuma, Ha Adata Yecheskel Man Amra, before Yecheskel came along, who taught us this halacha? And again, the Talmud gives us the same answer. It appears in Moed Katan too, it appears in many places. ולמדו למי שנתחייב שתי מיטות שנידון בחמורה, and the Talmud also derives that if someone has to get two death penalties, he did two sins simultaneously, he's supposed to get two death penalties, so you give him the more stringent one. So the Talmud derives it ממדרש הכתוב ביחזקאל, from the verse in Yechezkel, it says, "V'olid ben parit shofech dam." A person can lead a certain life and then have a son who's a murderer. Amru, so the Talmud over there derives. "V'olid ben parit shofech dam b'saif." He has a son that's a problematic son who's a murderer. So if he's a murderer, he gets a death penalty of saif, of hereg. He gets killed by the sword. Then the verse says, "Ve'etishet reutimei," that this problematic son defiles his friend's wife. Zoishetish, that's talking about adultery, a married woman. So then he gets a death penalty of chenek. Then the pasuk says, "Ve'legilulim nasainav," this problematic son then looked on to idol worship. Zoavadazara, gilulim literally means feces. That this problematic son was attracted to feces. That's a way of saying avodazara. So even in the Nevi'im, even in the Torah purposely gives derisive nicknames to idol worship, and it teaches us an attitude. We don't even give them the respect of using their proper name. In Tanakh, and in general, in Jewish thought, we view the name as something that carries great weight. And using someone's name gives them a certain amount of credence. When you don't want to use their name, that takes away from their credence. When King Saul wants to deride David HaMelech, he calls him son of Jesse, Ben Yishai. He doesn't call him David. And David HaMelech even weeps about that in Tehillim. He says, they won't even call me by name. And there's a reason. It carries a certain weight. So the same thing when it comes to idols. We don't use their name. We don't say base coolis, we say marculis. And so on and so forth. We very often use derisive names for idol worship. So the pasuk here says, and he lifts his eyes to the feces, which is talking about avodah zarah. So okay, we said murder, he was supposed to get the death penalty of saif. Adultery, he was supposed to get chenek. Idol worship, skila. Vichtiv, and then the pasuk says motyumat amavbo. So yeah, beskila. The pasuk tells you he did these three sins, he gets the most stringent death penalty of skila. Matkiv lav nach ma Yitzchak, ima kulu beskila. Im ken mai kamash malan, v'dilma Torah kamader. Im ken ibay leladur ikad hadra Moshe. Rav Nachman ben Yitzchak attacks. Maybe he did each of these sins, and he was obligated to get skila for each of them. So the Talmud discusses back and forth and says, bottom line, then what did Yecheskel teach me? If he's just talking about a case where he was supposed to get three of the same death penalty and he gave him that death penalty, okay. So what did he have to tell me that for? So the Gemara offers, maybe he was reviewing Torah for them. The prophet does have to teach Torah. So the Gemara says, and then let him review it the way Moshe said it. What does he have to give new cases for if all he's doing is review? Obviously, if he gave you this case, he was teaching you something. Machloket. I don't remember. I got to open the Gemara. I don't remember. Skila shreifa hereg chenek. What do you want? Skila shreifa hereg chenek. Okay. Look it up. Maybe I'm wrong. Look it up. V'yesh lehem zal din gadol osin bo ma'aseh v'kiddushin v'gerushin v'kobanot limdu mipsukei anvim. And you know what? They, of blessed memory, who are the big they? We're talking about the rabbis. They have this big halacha which they use when it comes to marriage and divorce and korbanos. And this big halacha we're about to talk about, they derived from verses of the prophets. K'mo shamu b'gmar gittin, as the Talmud says in Gittin. Is there something that biblically Shemitah wouldn't annul the deal? But the rabbis can say, we forgo the deal. How could they get involved in monetary matters? So Rava says, yeah, sure. We're the courts, we're the bosses, and when we want, we can annul property rights, ownership rights of anything. Hefker, Bezdin, Hefker. Bezdin can declare something to be ownerless. So that's a massive rule. Bezdin has monetary rights to make something ownerless. Now you understand that this is going to apply to many areas in halacha. You could have situations where the courts say, oh, I know you engaged that girl. Now, before we explain this, you realize that a court today can't decide how to apply this. There are specific instances where the courts set up that this would come to play, that this halachic mechanism takes effect, and wherever they set it up, so then it takes effect. But it's not an open check that if I set up my court, so you know what, I like your Cadillac, Hefker, Bezdin, Hefker, it's not yours anymore. Goodbye, it's mine. You know, it doesn't work that way. The courts can't just do what they want. There were specific systems, and wherever the court set it up, because of circumstances of dire need, so then where they set it up, it works. So there will be instances, going back to the case we were about to say, where Bezalel engages Betsy. Okay, good Jewish girl, Betsy. And then the courts, for specific reasons, come to Bezalel and say, what did you engage her with? So Bezalel says, I bought her a diamond ring. What do you mean? Not a diamond ring. I bought her a gold ring. Fine, gold today is almost the price of diamonds. You're okay. I bought her a gold ring. So the courts say, well, Bezalel, we're sorry to tell you that gold ring wasn't yours. She's not your wife. So Bezalel says, what do you mean? I bought it, my money. Honest to goodness. The courts say, yeah, but we're the boss. So there are circumstances where the courts have no choice. We can't go into all the details. If he'll bring it up, we'll go into it. But there can be cases like that. Generally, it's in circumstances where the husband does things that are very improper. So there can be instances. Today, again, we can't. It's not an open check. We can't do this. But there can be instances where the husband tries to complicate his wife and the courts make an automatic revision and they say, she was never your wife, goodbye. Now, there was some clown a few years ago who decided that he's going to apply this however he wants. That's why I gave this whole introduction. And he set up his own court and he said, now I'm going to free every woman who can't get a get from her husband. I'll just, annul the things retroactively. And obviously that doesn't work. It's ridiculous. So everyone came out against him. Okay? So that's why I wanted to preclude any misunderstandings. I gave the whole introduction. But anyways, so the Ramban says, we have this big halacha that applies to many different cases in halacha called Hefker Bezdin Hefker. Shenemal. Oh, and what's the source for this? A pasuk in Ezra. Ezra said, we're making a mass rally. I want everyone here. And if you guys don't get here for those 3 days, so then I'm taking away all your money. So the Talmud says, how could Ezra take away all their money? So the Talmud says, you see, the courts could take away a person's money. That's a pasuk in Ksuvim. It's not even a pasuk in Nevim. Rabbi Ezra Amar, a different pasuk v'rashi avot v'chima inyan rashim etzel avot ela lomar lecha ma'avot manchinim neim kol ma shirtzu af rashim manchinim tam kol ma shirtzu v'ze etzlam Torah shlema and Chazal treat this as biblical k'mo shamru karet midivreihem mi'ika v'eshivu karet shal yedei divreihem batlo u'k'mo ha'rabanan p'rshute ki heichidi lechayv alei. You could have situations where the rabbis put something in his possession and they obligate him over it. So you could, the rabbis have monetary control. Again, not for flagrant usage, but the responsible courts of back then did use this to ensure a certain degree of law and order.
So if you're talking about aguna, that money could be used for the.
So we don't use it for an aguna. We don't use it freely. That's what this person wanted to do. He had a great idea. He said, let me free all the women whose husbands don't want to give him gittin. I'll just frame like that, or even better, a woman got remarried, had children, now they're mamzerim. She never got a kosher get from her first husband. No problem. Let's just annul that first kiddushin. She was never married. You understand that that's a destruction of Judaism, because then there's no marriage. You know, I can do whatever I want. Maximum, if a wife cheats on her husband, you'll just go and undo the first marriage and everything's okay. No, it doesn't work that way. The rabbis did not give such authority. You can't do that. No way you could do that. But there are instances where they did use this power, and yet this power stems from a pasuk in prophets and ksuvim. Well, they could do what they want. They could. Our courts are. This goes to a whole discussion of what power our courts have today. We don't have real courts. We don't have real rabbis. In order to be a rabbi, you have to have smicha. Smicha has to be on tradition all the way back to Moshe. We don't have that anymore. We don't have anyone who has smicha that dates all the way back to Moshe. So we don't have a real rabbi. We don't have a real court. So what do we have? We have a situation where we were given the capacity to function in this compromised situation. Okay, so you understand. We can't do whatever we want. We can only do whatever they set us up to do. Technically, they were, but you have to be responsible. You know, if you got smicha, then you were someone big.
So should we keep studying you, or you're no real rabbi?
You should definitely keep studying with me, but I will not be able to give you smicha because I don't have smicha all the way back to Moshe Rabbeinu. We use a borrowed term when we talk about smicha today. Our smicha today is simply that the teacher says, although the halacha requires the student not to give halachic ruling in the presence of his teacher, the teacher says, I hereby say this student is fit to give halachic ruling. I'm giving him authorization, he should give halachic ruling. That's more or less our smicha. It has nothing to do with the ancient smicha. No. He's going to give us many more examples, but I think we'll have to pause here, unfortunately.